Hi, this is Lynn Fraser with the Killaby Center for Recovery and the Radical Recovery Summit. And we're interviewing some of the people we've had on the Radical Recovery Summit who are working with trauma around COVID-19. Dr. Jamie Marich is certainly one of those that I'm happy to be able to talk with again. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about your perspective? What are you seeing? What are the people that you're working with seeing?
I think what's very important to acknowledge is there's a great both and going on here, because on one hand, we are in a global trauma right now. The thing about trauma is it is a fundamentally subjective human experience. What may be traumatic to me and my system might be something that's no big of a deal to you or someone else. And so I think it becomes important that we honor people's individual experiences through this, while also recognizing that we are all in this kind of global unknown right now. And I think if I'm looking at the one common thread that's really underlining different experiences, because as I was sharing with you just as a friend, I've been doing pretty well during this, because I feel in a lot of ways that my existing practices and my existing recovery has prepared me for something like this. Mm-hmm. And I also am tremendously privileged to be able to work online and be in a safe environment in my home. And so I am saying that from my perspective, yet I also want to recognize that most people that I work with and most people that are out there do not have that that same experience. So but I think for all of us, whether you're going through this and doing well, or whether you're going through this and struggling, the real common thread is fear of the unknown. And because we don't know how long we're going to be in these stay-at-home orders. We don't know how long this is going to last. And I know there's been a lot of news rhetoric around, when is this going to end? And not knowing or not having a concrete answer can be hell on somebody whose system has already been wired for trauma and distress. So I think that is probably the biggest thing I'm seeing and that I'm working with is how do we navigate this fear of the unknown?
Right. And we're really seeing people's nervous systems on display right now. Mm-hmm. Some people are handling it quite well. A lot of people are going into fear responses.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, none of this is scientific by any means. It's just my observations of what I'm noticing, that a lot of what has been underlying in an individual's experience anyway, around fear and failure and uncertainty, is likely getting amplified by what we're going through right now. But there's a flip side of that as well, which is whatever was there in terms of adaptive, positive coping and resilience skills, I see those getting amplified too, mm-hmm. with what we're going through now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of people are drinking more and a lot mm-hmm. of people are meditating more.
Correct. So, very well put in summary. Yeah. Yep.
So the kind of work you do, I know that you're very experienced with EMDR and train people in that. And you also have some beautiful other programs like dancing mindfulness. And mm-hmm. can you just talk a little bit about those and how those would relate to people coping in a healthier way, maybe we could say?
Yes. Well, the larger umbrella of what I do is something called expressive arts therapy. And dancing mindfulness is a component of that. So by definition, expressive arts is when we use any of our creative practices, whether it be dancing, writing, singing, listening to music, movement, visual art, drama. There's so many, and I even expand the definition to include practices like cooking, gardening, filmmaking, that mm-hmm. anything that gives you a template to express your inner world is an expressive art. And I believe why I like to use the word expressive arts and why I gravitate towards that field is acknowledging that we all have something to express right now. That a lot of people have baggage around the word creative because they don't think they're original or they don't think they're exceptional in any way, yet we all have something to express, even if that's going outside and screaming at the top of your lungs because you can't take this anymore. Right. And I've seen some beautiful expressions be warranted during this time with what people are putting online, even some of the memes and the jokes that people are putting together. I'm personally being very entertained by them, and I don't say that to minimize what's going on and minimize the suffering. Yet I really applaud how a lot of people's creative and humorous thinking has helped them to get through this. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I know I've had my dance practice, my yoga practice personally has helped me to get through this. And we had the great privilege mm-hmm. here at the end of April. See, I'm mixing my months up. that we were still able to host our Dancing Mindfulness retreat online, because we do that every year in person in April. And we were able to dance together on our Zoom screens and engage in other practices in between. And I mean, any expressive practice can certainly give us an outlet. And one of the hallmarks of expressive arts therapy is it's never about end product, it's about being in process. So how is being in process with what you're doing helping you to weave through what you're going through? So a lot of people, it's visual journaling, sketch journaling, writing, poetry, and both in my community and what I've seen in the larger sphere of the internet, I've seen creativity and expression getting a lot of people through these times. And I encourage you, if you're listening, to keep doing that, even if it's keeping a journal of some rantings and sketchings, or going outside and moving and dancing and screaming in a frustrated manner. Let it out.
That's so true. That getting that energy out of the body is so important when we're traumatized.
When we're traumatized, yes, anyway, and likely too, when we feel trapped, it's important to get that energy out of the body, because a common negative cognition that a lot of trauma survivors carry is I am trapped. And gee, I wonder about what's going on right now that may be eliciting I am trapped. So particularly if that, because I know that's been one of my driving cognitions I've worked on in my own trauma therapy over the years. So it's important to give your body those experiences where you're not feeling so trapped.
Yeah, and to recognize what we do have some agency around.
Correct.
And then ways that we don't necessarily right now don't have to be the whole of the picture. Can you talk a little bit about EMDR for people who might not know much about that, and how that fits in with kind of maybe even on the spot, how we're handling things as well as a therapy?
Yeah, I have a lot I could say about this, so feel free to cut me off at any time. So EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. It is a method that was developed by the now deceased Dr. Francine Shapiro in the late 80s when she was going through her own trauma recovery from a cancer diagnosis. And on the surface, it could seem like a very weird method where we encourage people to activate their traumatic networks through some questions we ask them. And then we ask them to move their eyes back and forth following our fingers or following a little bouncing ball that goes across the screen. And that repetitive eye movement back and forth, what we're seeing does create shifts in how memories are stored in the brain and hopefully lessens the impact of traumatic stress. And then over the years, we found that for people who can't well tolerate eye movements, they can do something like wear a set of headphones like I'm wearing now and hear alternate beeps. In person, we can tap the individual or have them hold a machine that creates alternating pulsers. But now in the telehealth model, because we're doing some really cool things with telehealth and EMDR right now, we can also have people self-tap. And as the clinician, we're guiding them when to start and stop. We're giving them some guidance on how fast, how slow to apply things. And all of this is done within a comprehensive treatment model where people are very well prepared to handle what might come up. So, I mean, EMDR is my passion. It was introduced into my life when I was about 2 years sober, and it was that treatment method that really helped me deal with the depth of my mental health issues that were coming up in early sobriety. And as a young clinician, I knew I had to get trained in it, and then I became passionate about teaching it, writing about it. And so EMDR has really been a big part of my career anyway. And then as soon as everything hit with COVID-19, a lot of the conversation turned to, well, how can we do EMDR online? Because up until this crisis, it was always a bit of a controversial area to talk about, even in EMDR circles, that there are some EMDR writers and clinicians and thinkers who say, like, we can't be doing it online because there's too many unpredictabilities or there's nothing like in person. And then you had other folks say, like, hey, it may be advantageous to do it online, because you may have a client who's a journalist in Uganda, and treating them there while they're in the midst of going through stuff may be better than when they come back to Britain 6 months later. Right. And I also consult in a lot of places like Montana and Australia, where people may live 6 hours from their nearest EMDR therapist. So the reality is it has been done before COVID-19, EMDR online, but it was very much an emerging area of conversation. And then when shelter in place sent clinicians and clients alike into the telehealth model, it was funny because I realized in that moment, I don't have a lot of telehealth experience. I don't have a lot of EMDR telehealth experience, but I have more than about 90% of my folks I've trained and people in my community. Right. And I also was, you know, had the good fortune of one of my very dear friends from the UK has been a big thought leader in doing EMDR online, and he was doing it from the beginning. So I brought him in to do a webinar with some of my following here in the US. And now what we're seeing is it is not only possible, but in a lot of cases, is advantageous to being the EMDR method online when people are actively experiencing stress and trauma right now, in a way that may be helping them make links back to old unresolved material. As I already mentioned, like the I am trapped example, if a person really has that belief of I am trapped that's being significantly elicited by what's happening now, I've seen people do some amazing work on being able to trace the origins of it in a way that I don't know if they would have if we weren't in this situation. So it's exciting times. Even the EMDR International Association has now allowed us, we trainers, to take the model online to train, which is something, if you told me, Lynn, a year ago I'd be doing that, I would have laughed in your face. Like, the association will never allow it, and I don't know how I feel about it. And if anything, this whole crisis has taught me that adaptation is possible, and I'm grateful for the healing and the recovery and the practices I've had that have allowed me to embrace what's going on with the spirit of adaptation.
Yes, yeah. So if somebody, for instance, goes into an environment where they're scared they might have been exposed to the virus, and it could be like a really intense environment, it might just be that they've gone to pick something up that they need. What is there anything on the spot that you could suggest? Like, should we be doing this tapping, or what would be something people could do just on the spot?
Yeah. I mean, in that context, it's really hard to know because of the person's individual profile and what exact fear it's bringing in. I mean, I am always a fan of breath work for on the spot types of things. And I realize even as I say that, that some people may be scared to be doing breathing because of this being largely a respiratory type virus. So something that I like to teach is to just clench the shoulders up by the ears. So it's almost like you're identifying the anxiety and the stress that possible exposure or possible stress is bringing up, and you're intensifying it. So it's like I'm clenching it, and then just let the shoulders go and notice what happens. And then do two or three more of those. Clench the shoulders. And then release and notice what happens to the breath right away. And then one more time, clenching the shoulders. And then on this next one, as you release the shoulders, see if the body needs to move in a certain way in response. Maybe there's something that would feel good or nourishing to kind of shake out. Whew. Whatever your body may have picked up from that stress or anxiety. Another good short-term skill is pressure point. So you can always do a pressure point just right here on the breastbone. I mean, if you have fear that you've been exposed, I would obviously say that getting more information and taking necessary steps like to get like nothing would alleviate the anxiety like that. Although I also know that that might be easier said than done in certain communities. So my general directive is do your best to keep yourself safe. That a lot of these preventative measures we're talking about, like wearing masks, I can't emphasize that enough. Cause I think it's not only an act of caring for yourself, it's an act of caring for others. And then do what you have to do to take care of the stress that this is bringing up in the body. Now, you asked about the self-tapping, like, should we just be self-tapping? In a short little presentation like this, I don't want to put it out there outright as like, yeah, go ahead and tap. Could it be helpful? Yes. But my big caution would be that for it to truly kind of be EMDR, you want to be doing it under the guidance of a professional who has shown you kind of how to use the tapping in certain circumstances. But, and so I guess I just want to be clear that if you just start tapping like this, there is a risk it could make you a little more activated and more anxious. And that's why I said like EMDR professionals can give you the best guidance on how and when to use it. But That being said, even as you're watching this, trying a little bit of preventative or almost like a practice run, just back and forth tapping to see what feels nurturing, what feels soothing. And if you're ever feeling too activated or too anxious by the tapping, it means you're probably going too fast. So if you're using the tapping more to engage a relaxation response, like you can think of something pleasant, like the flower that's in the back. And if thinking of that pleasant flower helps you to feel a sense of like, hey, I'm catching a breath, I'm easing up a little bit, then definitely go like this. But if you do have fear around exposure, obviously take the steps that you need to find out the information and get yourself tested or cared for if possible. And also consider that there are a lot of mental health providers now working via telehealth, a lot of EMDR providers who are helping you work via telehealth. And a lot of us are very well prepared to take you through more recent events or short-term types of traumas like this that can help you work through it. And I think, you know, one of my other pieces of advice on that would be risk and exposure is a natural, normal part of the world we're in right now. And using your existing skills to cope with that and to take the necessary steps for care is important. But if your response is seeming in any way out of proportion, or it's really getting in the way of your life, that could be that it is tapping into an earlier traumatic experience that hasn't been healed. And that is where, if it's available to you, I really would recommend consulting with a professional via telehealth who can help you work through some of what that could be about.
Right. So I'm noticing a lot of people are talking now, and I've experienced this too, of as we're moving away from complete isolation. Mm-hmm. Like I literally didn't go to, I haven't even been into a store yet. But I've done a couple of curbside pickups, which are low risk, right?
Right.
But a lot of people are saying, well, I was kind of enjoying being at home because my nervous system was settling down. I felt safer. And now we're moving out into the world more.
Right.
So there does seem to be a bit of an elevated response in the nervous system.
Yes.
So now's a good time to be working with some of those regulating things.
Yes. And I think I'm noticing different experiences from different people based on their fears, their beliefs, maybe what has or hasn't been addressed in their past. And I'm really trying to embrace it as everybody's perspective on this is valid. Because I'm somebody who I have had, I would say, a moderate amount of contact with life through all of this or with outside life. Like I've gone to the stores. My romantic partner lives out of town, so I've gone and visited, and vice versa. And I've, you know, let a couple of my recovery network into my home. And it's just felt like I have, and everybody's done it with their own full risk and consent. And we've taken precautions with washing hands and all of that. And even as I say that, I'm wondering, oh, how many people are going to be judging me for that? But I also stand by the decisions I've made that it's been what I've needed for my own health and wellness. So I think people have a right to do what feels good for them, because I feel like my nervous system has not been elevated during all of that. But I also want to respect people whose nervous systems might be on fire just by me saying that.
Right. And there's a lot of shaming going on in both directions, it seems.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where, you know, you feel awkward if you have a mask on, or you feel judged if you don't, or, you know, there's a lot of fear, which makes people not, maybe as they're not operating as their highest self right now.
I couldn't think of a better way to describe it than what you just said.
So let's talk a little bit about what people can, you know, where people could connect with you and the programs you're running. And so they could sign up for telehealth individual sessions, and what else are you doing?
Sure. So the easiest website I want to give to the general public is traumamadesimple.com. Because to your point about what about folks who are having these reactions and experiences in life, Trauma Made Simple is a good one-stop shopping for me, because everything I've done for free is online. So a lot of these pressure point exercises, clench and release exercises, some yoga nidra strategies, trauma-informed yoga. So you can get a whole collection of what I do online for free, including some information about my books and my newest
book, which is actually just a revised and expanded edition of Trauma and the 12 Steps, is coming out in July. Mm-hmm. So there's more information about that on the site. My company is instituteforcreativemindfulness.com. So that's the best place to go if you're interested in training with me, the online EMDR trainings that I mentioned, the expressive arts trainings that I've mentioned. And then, of course, I have my general site, jamiemarich.com, which is essentially my practice, if you want to reach out for me that way.
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And sure. I've had so many people say, you know, it's so good to hear different perspectives and simple things that we can do that overcome that sense of powerlessness that, you know, I could do this pressure point, or I could do something bigger. I could contact a therapist and do some EMDR, or, you know, just to realize that we're all struggling with this and that there's lots of ways. And I love the expressive arts. You know, that just is, there's such joy in our creativity and our expression that way.
Yes. And to that point, I also want to give a quick plug. I do two Facebook groups that your listeners might find helpful. One is called Dancing Mindfulness and Expressive Arts Community Forum. And that is a place where people are sharing some of their own creations and expressions, or we post a lot of just fun videos in there and fun articles about what people are doing with creativity and expression right now. And then I also have the Trauma and the 12 Steps Networking Group, which is a closed Facebook group that people can join as well if they want to interact with folks who are in recovery and what we're going through during all of this.
All right. Well, I'll put those all on there so people can access them. And thank you so much for joining us, Jamie.
My great pleasure, Lynn. Thanks.
The Killaby Center for Recovery is reaching out to some of the people we've interviewed for the Radical Recovery Summit. We're asking, how can you support people that are struggling during the COVID-19 pandemic? There is a range of programs and supports that people are offering, as well as ways to frame this. What is it that's happening inside of you during this time? Come to radicalrecoverysummit.com to click right through to the interviews.